Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAOddsBreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC 204 event, which takes place in Manchester, United Kingdom. If you're unfamiliar with our format, myself and Nick will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, we went 0-3 on our premium bets for UFC Fight Night 96 to lose 6.7 units overall, and we also lost our 1-unit free bet on Jonathan Wilson. Back to the present, UFC 204 features a 12-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass, Fox Sports 1, and pay-per-view this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking off the preliminary card on Fight Pass is a lightweight contest between Lucas Saevsky, who is 13-2, and Mark Diakisi, who is 9-0. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Diakisi minus 185 to come back on Saevsky at plus 145. Public did bet Diakisi up. He's currently minus 210 at our sponsored sportsbook, fivedimes.eu, and Saevsky is currently at plus 175. So a little bit more love coming in on the hyped prospect. I mean, Diakisi is definitely just that, a hyped prospect. The guy has some skill. If you look at him, it looks like he's a striker. I mean, he's got more finishes by knockout than he does submission. And if you look at his last two performances, he's won against decent competition outside of the UFC fairly quickly. I mean, those knockouts were beautiful. I mean, he has that kind of special talent, that athleticism. And more than that, he's not really a striker. I mean, the guy has a grappling-based background, a wrestler, a grappler. He's got some decent BJJ. He's got some decent takedown ability. And again, I think he's more of an athlete than anything else. So he's a well-rounded, hyped prospect that's only getting better. Early on in his career, he definitely had a little bit of a padded record. He didn't face a lot of tough competition. But in his last three fights now, he definitely had to step it up, and he's performed better and better with each fight. So Diakisi is definitely one of these guys you got to keep an eye on, and that's why people are betting him up. I mean, because the guy seems like he's a well-rounded talent that is going to do a lot of good things in the UFC. But Saevsky, on the other hand, he's not bad. I mean, I understand that he had back-to-back losses to start his UFC career. You know, unfortunately for him, he fought good competition. Hine and Burns were two guys that you can definitely understand losing to. I mean, Hine beat him by decision, a competitive decision, but Hine deserved to get the nod. Then he was actually doing pretty good in his last fight against Burns, but towards the end of that round, with about a minute left to go or so, Burns really stepped it up and was able to finish him by submission. So Burns can finish most, though, if he gets to the ground by submission. So again, I don't think you have to really look at those fights for Saevsky compared to this fight. This is a new fight. He is stepping in on short notice, so cardio concerns might be a little bit of an issue, although he seems to be in pretty decent shape all year round. He's one of those fighters that stays in decent shape. And again, I mean, that loss to Burns was by submission. I don't think it took a lot out of him, so I think he's not going to be that bad off as far as cardio goes for this fight. I think he should be okay, and he should be the biggest test of Diakisi's career thus far. So this is not an easy fight. That's why I don't necessarily agree with the people that are betting this up a little bit, even though I see what Diakisi has. Again, he's a pretty good athlete. He has a lot of explosiveness, a lot of power on his feet. He's got good submission and finishing ability on the ground as well, but he's still raw. I mean, he still does make mistakes on the ground. If you can kind of weather that initial storm for him, you can get him to the ground, maybe take his back, get top position, control him up against the cage a little bit as well. All things that Saevsky is going to be able to do in this spot, I think. So it's one of these fights that I think everybody's going to kind of underestimate Saevsky, but I think he's going to be game and possibly could pull off this upset win. I am going to go with the favorite here, though. I do see more of an upside for Diakisi in the spot, so I'm leaning slightly his way in a pure pick perspective, but I do think it's a dog or pass situation. There's no way I put my money on the favorite here. I think that Saevsky is actually going to be able to perform a lot better than most of us think. So a close competitive fight on the scorecards is what I'm thinking is going to happen. If there's a finish along the way, I wouldn't be shocked, but I do think that both these guys can kind of weather the storm against each other and probably have one heck of a competitive fight. So my official pick is going to be Diakisi to get the W here.
I think this fight will be pretty competitive. Especially because Saevsky is definitely a little bit better than people give him credit for. I mean, UFC debut, he didn't look that great. He looked flustered on the feet. Nick Hein had a really great stick-and-move game plan that he worked beautifully, and he was able to thwart just about every takedown attempt as well. Second time around, Saevsky took a whole year off to face Gilbert Burns, and he came in, he looked better. His hands were a little crisper, his footwork was better. He actually rocked Burns on the feet at one point, but just never quite threatened the finish enough. And eventually he got rocked on the feet and then finished on the ground. So that's the big problem here is, Saevsky is a pretty good grappler with okay hands, and he is still just 25 years old, so he's definitely improving every time we see him, but I don't know if he is improving enough to win this fight, mainly because he's taking it on short notice, as Nick mentioned, and he's facing someone that it seems like the UFC definitely wants to get behind in Mark Diakasi. Diakasi is just a beast. I mean, he is so athletic. He has good size for the division. He's Diakasi's going to have a couple inches in height and reach on Saevsky. And Diakasi is somebody with a lot of power and explosion in his strikes. Now, Diakasi overall is not an amazing striker. He's more of a guy that will just look to take you out early. His last two fights, he actually won them both on the first punch he connected with. And just one huge overhand right landed in both fights, and then it was over. Combined, I believe it was a minute exactly, both of his title defenses in Bama. Now, Diakasi, on top of having a lot of one-punch power, he throws pretty decent kicks. Nothing crazy, but he does throw them very hard. So Saevsky will have to look out for that. Doesn't want to get, you know, worn down with some leg kicks or anything. And Diakasi, for the most part, he actually is a bit of a grappling-focused guy. He has overall pretty solid scrambling ability, really good takedowns, whether it's with body locks or with a double leg. He can just explode forward and get them. But I don't think he really wants to screw around too much on the grappling department against Saevsky, because I think he's asking for it a little bit. And overall, I think the stand-up is where Diakasi is going to shine here. Not because he's an amazing technical striker, but because I think he just has that speed and explosion to get in with that big power right hand and connect on Saevsky before Saevsky can react to it. And unless Saevsky is really working on his head movement and keeping his hands up at all times, then I think at some point in this fight, Diakasi lands that overhand right. And especially because Gilbert Burns landed it twice, and he is not as quick or as powerful or as overall dangerous on the feet as Diakasi is capable of being. So I'm going to side with the UFC newcomer here in Diakasi. I think Saevsky will give him a fight, but at some point that right hand is going to connect. So my pick is going to be Mark Diakasi. Now, sticking with the lightweight division, we have Leonardo Santos, who is 15-4-1, taking on Adriano Martins, who is 28-7. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I put Martins -350, the comeback on Santos at +250. This has been bet down quite a bit. It's now Martins -220, the comeback on Santos is +180. So a lot of support coming in on the savvy vet, Santos here in this spot. Man, I'll tell you what, I understand a little bit because Santos is known for his grappling. I mean, his BJJ is off the hook. He's definitely one of the better jiu-jitsu practitioners in all of MMA. I mean, that's how good his ground game can be. But the point that everybody's betting him is not really based on the ground. It's based on his improvements as a striker. I mean, he's definitely made some huge improvements in that area. I mean, look at his knockout over Lee recently. Even before that, you could tell his hands were getting a little better. He's getting more confidence, coming forward a little bit more. So he's not your slouch on the feet either. So I think a lot of people out there are expecting this fight to be fairly competitive, even with Santos being the grappler, actually keeping it upright and being able to land on Martins. Because one thing you could say about Martins, his defense striking is not the greatest. He keeps his hands low for sure. He's been tagged a few times. Obviously, he's been knocked out a couple times throughout his career as well. But that being said, I still think that Martins is the better striker. He's the more dangerous striker. He's got more pure power. He's got really good timing with his punches as well for his counter striking. And then when it comes down to it, I believe that he is the better wrestler, and he's not probably going to get submitted by Santos because his jiu-jitsu is pretty decent, at least decent enough to survive in the spot against Santos for sure. So both these guys are world-class on the ground. Both these guys have definitely serviceable stand-up games, but I do believe Martin's power and his stand-up is just a little bit better than Santos. So it's a dangerous fight for both on the feet, I think more so than anything else, because both of them, again, defensively is a little bit of a concern. But I do think that Martins should be able to dictate and control this fight. I think he probably ends up, if it does go to the ground, on top. Santos does have a tendency to slow down a little bit more as the fight goes as well. So really, I do kind of disagree with the early action, because I just think stylistically it is a bad matchup for Santos, because outside of maybe catching him and knocking him out, I don't know how he wins it. I mean, if he doesn't accomplish the knockout, he's going to probably lose this fight, either by getting knocked out himself or on the scorecards, because Martin should be able to outpoint him. So expecting a pretty good fight. I understand and respect what Santos has been able to accomplish recently, but I still think that Martins is a better fighter. That's why I opened him a little bit higher, and I'm going to stick to my guns, and I think that Martins wins this fight, so he's going to be my pick.
I definitely expect this fight to be competitive, but Martins does have the major advantages. Martins is, in my opinion, the more seasoned, polished striker. He has a little bit more pure knockout power, and while Leonardo Santos has an incredible ground game, Martins is no slouch there as well. So I think that Santos probably has an edge on the ground, but it's not so overwhelming that Martins won't know what to do if the fight hits the canvas. And Santos isn't exactly a powerhouse wrestler that can just drag this fight to the floor either. So I'm not really worried about the ground at all in this fight. I think for the most part, or maybe all of it, it will be a stand-up contest. Now, not to knock Leonardo Santos either on the feet, his stand-up is definitely improving. While he wasn't always the greatest stand-up striker, his last fight, he definitely showcased some serious improvements, not just in his technique, but in his power. He landed some stiff jabs against Kevin Lee, landed some good 1-2 combinations, and then just blasted Lee during an exchange, dropped him, and eventually set up a TKO finish on the ground. So Santos definitely is somebody you should not be underestimating here, especially because both of these guys have been out for so long. If either of them comes in rusty early in this fight, that could be all it takes. Martins has not fought since, I believe, October of last year, and Santos hasn't fought since December of last year. So both have had exceptionally long layoffs, and both are getting up there in years. You know, Adriano Martins, while personally I think he's a top 15 lightweight, he's 33 years old. And Leonardo Santos, as an Ultimate Fighter winner for Brazil, he's 36 years old. So they're definitely entering kind of their golden years in the lightweight division, but I'm definitely going to side with Martins. I just think that he has too many advantages on the feet, even though Santos is improving. And I think Santos probably has a little bit better chin too, but I think Martins makes up for that with his power and countering ability. So I'm going to side with Adriano Martins here. Now moving on to the Fight Pass headliner. We have Danny Roberts, who is 13-1, taking on Mike Perry, who is 8-0. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Roberts, minus 135. The comeback on Perry, minus 105. So virtually a pick-em with a very slight lean towards Roberts. Right now, it's actually Roberts minus 140. The comeback on Perry is at plus 120. So action did come in on Roberts a little bit more, and now we're seeing it back down a little bit. Action coming back in on Perry, and the line margins have tightened up a little bit. We got 20-cent lines showing here at 5 dimes. Tough fight because, again, I've been kind of disappointed in both fighters, really. I mean, if you do some film study, you could definitely see some flaws amongst both. I mean, looking at Roberts, first off, he definitely has some skill. He has got some talent. He's undefeated in the UFC, of course. and he's looked okay, but honestly, he's been a little bit more disappointing. I mean, with the hype behind him out of the UK, coming in as a serious prospect. I mean, he did get a good win over Coy. That submission was pretty sweet. And then, of course, Dominic Steele, that was a hard-fought battle. He didn't get Steele out of there, and it ended up being, you know, like I said, just a tough battle all the way through. And Steele is one of those guys that's kind of underrated. If you don't get him out of there early, you're going to be in for a fight. So not necessarily a bad W either. I mean, either one of those fights for sure. But still, if you look a little bit closer at Roberts, I mean, he has the ability to finish fights on the feet. He's got the ability to finish on the ground as well. He's got some decent takedown defense, decent wrestling. So there's a lot to like. It's just that he's missing something. I don't know what it is. If it's aggression, if it's speed, it's just, I don't know. It's disappointing because I think he could be even better with his skill set. I mean, he even has some size for the division as well. So I think he could be a little bit more dominant, and he's not. Maybe that's what's missing, in my opinion. He needs to just go out there and handle his business a little bit quicker. And he might in this fight, because Perry is one of these guys that's going to go 100 miles an hour for sure. He's dangerous. He's aggressive. Of course, we all know he's got a huge knockout power on the feet. He had a very successful debut win over Lim as an underdog. A lot of people actually were picking against him, but there were some bettors that came in on Perry as well, banking on the power against Lim's chin, and they got it. So I think that's Perry is definitely one of those guys that if he hits and lands flush on anybody at 170, of course he could put him out. He's got that much power. But his chin and his sub-defense overall himself, or his defense overall, I should say, on the feet, is not very good. So he is hittable. He has been rocked in fights before, almost finished in fights before, if you look at some of his fights before the UFC as well. So with a fighter like Roberts that is a little bit more technically skilled, that has fought in better competition, this is a decent step up for Perry as well. But again, against Lim, he performed, he came through very well, and he actually, the hype on him now is even bigger. And that's why you're seeing this line even be a little bit more competitive here in this spot, because a lot of people are believing that Perry is kind of hitting a stride. He's got the mouth that he promotes himself very well. He's got kind of that cocky attitude that a lot of people like as well. So he's really gaining some popularity. I mean, it's one of those things that you either love him or hate him type of fighter. And if he can continue knocking people out and back up what he talks, then man, how could you not like the guy? But this is definitely a step up in competition. It's going to be hard really picking him here in this spot. I mean, I could see him knock Roberts out, but I still have to go with a more technical fighter, more experienced fighter. So I'm going to slightly lean towards Roberts, but this does deserve to be close to a pick-em type of fight, because it wouldn't surprise me at all if Perry pulls off the W here either.
I have to say, after watching Danny Roberts in his first two UFC fights and then watching Mike Perry in his UFC debut, Perry looked a lot more composed on the feet. Roberts was just sloppy and wild and getting caught by people that are not very good strikers. So I'm definitely concerned here heading into this fight. Now, I know Roberts is fighting in his home turf, but if this is just a pure stand-up fight, then Mike Perry is going to have a big edge, I think. Perry is kind of compact and explosive and looks for that big shot. It took him a little bit, like almost half a round, to find his timing against Hyunjoo Lim. But once he did, he dropped him three times in about a minute and a half, 2 minutes. So Danny Roberts had best be defending himself very well during exchanges, because Mike Perry, while he's not the most likable guy, he definitely has a serious knockout ability. Now, on the ground, haven't seen a lot of Perry on the ground. Mostly it's been defensively. And Roberts, on the other hand, has showcased a pretty active guard. He did pull off a triangle choke in his UFC debut. And then in his last fight against Dominic Steele, he kind of won the fight with takedowns and top control in kind of a gas fest. So I'm also really concerned about Danny Roberts' conditioning in this fight. If Mike Perry can pace himself, then all he has to do is survive the first round and a half, two rounds, and a knockout should just walk into his lap. At least that's what it looked like in Roberts' last fight. I mean, I know it was a scrap against Dominic Steele, but he had no business, like, just completely gassing the way he did. So, overall, you know, I think Roberts has talent, but he is just so sloppy. And I think Mike Perry connects at some point and puts him out. So my pick is going to be Mike Perry. Now, kicking off the Fox Sports 1 prelims, we have a welterweight contest between Leon Edwards, who is 11-3, and Albert Tumenov, who is 17-3. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Tumanov, minus 260. The comeback on Edwards at plus 180. Right now it's Tumanov minus 260, and the comeback is plus 220 on Edwards. So line margins basically tightened up a little bit, and there hasn't been two-way action on this fight, but a little bit more coming in on Tumanov, and I'm expecting that to continue for a little while, especially with parlays and whatnot as well. If you look at it, at first glance, it's striker versus striker. Both these guys could take a big sigh of relief because most of their losses or most of their struggles have come on the ground against guys that know they don't want to do anything with their striking and they want to get them to the floor as fast as possible. And they've had a little bit of success doing so. But with that said, it's really improved the ground games of both these guys as the takedown defense has gotten better. Their offensive wrestling has gotten better. So these guys have kind of been thrown in the fire and they've had to work on their weaknesses, and they've gotten better for sure. So I respect that. I think this is going to be a classic battle. Again, both these guys aren't going to really have to be as concerned with takedowns here in this spot. They're going to feel free to kind of let their striking go. And man, it should be a fun fight because both these guys are two of the better strikers at 170 pounds for sure, especially Tumanov. I mean, he has that reputation. The guy's a sniper. He can knock you out with either leg, either hand. I mean, just the diversity of his striking attack with a little bit of power and speed to go with this and accuracy as well is a thing of beauty. I mean, he's definitely a fun fighter to watch fight. But I think a lot of people are counting Edwards out. I mean, Edwards actually, I think, is a little bit physically stronger. I think he's got a little bit more power in both of his hands than Tumanov does. And at the same time, I think that Edwards, as we've seen recently, he's been getting wrestled so much that he's actually starting to utilize his wrestling offensively a little bit in his own right. So even though I think these guys are going to kind of neutralize each other out when it comes to the wrestling department, I think we are going to see some attempts, though, back and forth here. And I think it's probably going to be Edwards doing more of that, maybe mixing in a takedown or a little brief takedown. I don't think these guys are going to be able to control each other on the ground for long periods of time, but I do feel like that's where I guess the slight edge is going to lean me a little bit more towards Edwards in this spot, because I think Edwards is going to be able to bully Tumanov a little bit up against the cage, maybe sneak in a quick takedown. And then on the feet, he does have that southpaw look, and he's got, again, a ton of power in his hands. And if you look closer to Tumanov, with some of his striking matchups that he's had, I mean, he's obviously had a lot of success, but he's been in some pretty close fights against, I think, worse strikers than Edwards. So Edwards is going to be game. I think he's going to hang in there. This fight, I mean, both of these guys are tough as nails. I don't expect them, honestly, to finish each other here. I think both of them can kind of survive, even though they got both outstanding offense that they're going to be dishing out. And if it does hit the scorecards, I really think that Edwards might have the slight edge, especially in the UK crowd. He's going to be kind of in his backyard. I think the fans, everybody's going to be behind him a little bit more. That's not necessarily going to hurt his case and the judges. We just don't know. I mean, hometown advantage or not these days, you got to throw that out the window anymore if the judges are so crazy. So might not matter at all, but it certainly does not hurt Edwards if it is a competitive fight. And I do think it will be a competitive fight. So it's one of those cases that I'm going to go against the grain. I'm going to go against everybody that pretty much thinks Tumanov has this fight and it's going to be kind of a walk in the park for him. I don't think so. I think Edwards is going to be very game on the feet. I think he is going to mix in a little bit of wrestling as well. So we're going to probably see a very competitive battle, and I think Edwards is going to come away with a W. So I'm going to go his way.
The key in this fight for Leon Edwards is whether or not he does mix in that grappling, because Albert Tumanov, yeah, he's had some issues in the past in fights that he should have had on lockdown and wasn't quite able to dominate them the way we thought. But those were all against opponents that he was concerned about the takedown. Nico Musoke, you know, that was a bit of a competitive back and forth fight because Musoke is better on the ground than Tumanov. Ildemar Alcantara was able to get some takedowns after getting just completely blasted early in their fight. And you could argue that Tumanov should have won that fight, but regardless, he didn't fight to his full potential because he was worried about the takedown. And then most recently, Gunnar Nelson. He was worried about the takedown, and rightfully so, because once Gunnar got him in the second round, he was able to finish him. So this time around, if Leon Edwards can threaten with the takedown, if that's a part of his game that Tumanov has to have in the back of his mind, I don't think Tumanov will be fighting to his full potential. That being said, if this is a pure stand-up fight, then Tumanov probably has the edge just because of the power that he packs both in his hands and his feet. I mean, you watched the Lorenz Larkin fight, which was close, but I think Lorenz Larkin is a more technically sound striker than Leon Edwards, and Tumanov was able to beat him. But Lorenz Larkin doesn't really go for takedowns, doesn't really try to do a lot of damage in the clinch, at least offensively. So Tumanov really wasn't worried about that. Now, against Leon Edwards, Tumanov has to worry about the southpaw. He has to worry about somebody that's really light on their feet, has very heavy hands. I mean, Edwards has a knockout in about 7 or 8 seconds. under his belt in the UFC, one of the fastest of all time. So that's definitely something that Tumenov is going to have to be concerned about a little bit. And overall, Tumenov in pure stand-up, you really have to watch out for his high kicks. Edwards will definitely have to be on guard in that department. And Tumenov, man, he packs a ton of punch, ton of power in both hands. So if Edwards mixes up the grappling with his striking, he's got a shot. If he doesn't, I don't see how he wins. Just because of the pressure that Tumenov puts on and just the force behind his blows, it just looks like he's throwing them harder than you. Kind of the John Lineker effect. So, I definitely do think Edwards is a live dog, but I'm going to side with Albert Tumenov here. I just really like his power and the potential for him to not just win by knockout, but also potentially win a decision. Now dropping all the way down to the bantamweight division, we have Davy Grant, who is 10-2, taking on Damian Stasiak, who is also 10-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Grant -210, the comeback on Stasiak at +160. Right now it is actually Grant -185. Stasiak is still at +160, so line margins have tightened up a little bit. And there is two-way action again coming in on this fight. This should be interesting. I mean, Grant, in my opinion, is a pretty good fighter overall. I mean, I understand he was on the Ultimate Fighter. I believe it was season 18 or whatnot, where he ended up losing to Chris Holdsworth in the finale there for that fight. And that was actually a pretty decent fight until Holdsworth was able to get that choke. But outside of that, he had great success on the show, and he showed his well-rounded skill set. I mean, Grant is the type of guy that is kind of more well-known for his grappling skill. I mean, he has some decent wrestling. He definitely has the ability to finish fights on the ground as well. Pretty good jiu-jitsu. I mean, technical skill set. And he's the type of guy that goes for the kill as well, constantly looking for the finish. So you got to respect that. But even on the feet, man, the guy definitely has some power in his punches. He does and is capable of keeping the fight upright at times and knocking people out or making life miserable for people on their feet as well. He has a lot of power, underrated probably in that area. But and he does push a pretty high pace. So I do think that I like what I see in Grant. I think he's going to continue to win fights in the bantamweight division. And he should probably do that against Stasiak here on this spot. Stasiak's primarily a grappler. His stand-up game is getting better. I just don't think it's up to par with Grant overall. And I think actually on the ground, Stasiak's going to have his best way to win this fight because I think he's a pretty smooth grappler. If he can avoid just not staying on his back for long periods of time and maybe scrambling out of a bad position, getting top position, getting his submission game going a little bit against a guy like Grant. Because Grant, even though offensively he does have good submissions, defensively there is still a little bit of concern. I think Stasiak on the ground is a little bit more defensively sound. So that's what makes this a little bit interesting, because Grant does like to take the fight to the ground. If he does against Stasiak, that might not be the best idea because Stasiak is a pretty good grappler. Now, of course, a lot of people are going to point out the fact that Stasiak did lose to a guy like Meza on the ground, but Meza is actually a pretty solid wrestler grappler in his own right. I mean, that's what he does best as well. So, and that was, if I'm not mistaken, his Stasiak's UFC debut against Meza as well. So I'm expecting better competition, better everything from Stasiak. I mean, he rebounded since that loss and obviously has a win by submission in his last fight as well. So there's a lot of good things to like about Stasiak. I do think he's better than we're all estimating here. That's why the line's even competitive. But as far as matchups go, I don't know. I mean, I think Stasiak's going to really have to pull something out on the ground to get the W here, or just, you know, from a bad spot, end up scrambling in top position or something like that, kind of grinding Grant out. And I think it's going to kind of be tough to do. So my official pick is going to be Grant. I just think he's right now, he's probably the better overall fighter. And I think he does have a little bit more upside as well. So we'll see what Grant can do. But for this fight, I am picking him.
Stasiak is definitely dangerous. And if Grant isn't careful, he could find himself on the losing end of a scramble. One thing Nick didn't mention was also in Stasiak's UFC debut, I believe it was in the featherweight division. So he kind of got out-muscled a little bit. And since dropping down, though, he's definitely fighting guys his own size. And he was able to get that first-round submission in his bantamweight debut in his last fight. Now, against Davy Grant, Grant is an excellent wrestler, solid overall grappler. He looked very good in his last fight against Marlon Vera, a fighter that didn't have very good takedown defense that he was able to just kind of get on top at will and do some damage and win an easy decision. It definitely will not be as easy this time around. While Vera did have an active guard, he didn't have the overall grappling and scrambling ability that Stasiak possesses. So I think this fight will be considerably more competitive on the floor, and I do expect it to go to the floor multiple times. And on the feet, Grant is aggressive. He pushes a high pace. He definitely lands way more strikes per minute than Stasiak on the feet. But Stasiak, he kind of has that karate style a little bit of a background there. So you do have to watch out for, you know, that those one-off shots that Stasiak is potentially able to throw. That being said, I expect Grant just to be the aggressor on the feet and push a pace and win stand-up exchanges. And on the ground, it should definitely be competitive. It could honestly go either way on the floor. We really won't know for sure until we see both of these guys in action. But that being said, I think Stasiak is going to be fueled a little bit by the home field that'll be cheering him on. And I expect him to not just win, but potentially win impressively. Now, sticking with the bantamweight division, we have Ian Entwistle, who is 9-3, taking on Rob Font, who is 12-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Upping at Font -305, Entwistle +225. Right now, it's actually Font -300, Entwistle is +250. Was a little bit action early on Entwistle, now it's coming back towards Font. Line margins have tightened up here as well, so two-way action on this fight. I mean, it's pretty clear-cut, I think, here. We're not going to spend a lot of time on it. I mean, Entwistle needs to get this fight to the ground. And once on the ground, obviously, he's got a chance against most people because especially his leg locks and his submission, his knee bars and that sort of thing. I mean, it's very impressive. And, I mean, once he gets your leg, you're pretty much done. I mean, you don't want to get to that spot. So Font is going to have to be very cautious as far as Entwistle trying to get this fight to the floor. And if he is on the ground, he's going to have to try to scramble out and get back out of there as fast as he can and back to his feet. Where on the feet, Font is going to punish Entwistle. I mean, Font has underrated striking, to be honest with you. I know against Lineker, I was actually surprised that Font looked so bad, but you got to credit Lineker for that more than anything else. But Font is better than what he showed against Lineker. It just didn't obviously happen in that fight. He's got nasty power in both hands. He knows how to use it. He knows that he's a good striker. He's got decent takedown defense overall as well. So I think this is a problem fight for Entwistle. I mean, I think Font realizes what he's up against here. I think he should be smart enough to avoid it, and he should be smart enough to get the finish here. Entwistle, if he goes out of round one, he doesn't have the gas tank to really go much further at all. So I don't expect it to really last too long. As far as total goes, obviously it's out there like 1.5 under. Pretty large on the under, like 1.5 under to -210 right now. And I think that's fairly accurate because it's going to be hard to imagine Entwistle going 7.5 rounds with Font or vice versa. If Entwistle wins, it's probably going to be fairly quickly. So this fight is not going to go very long. And I think it's because Font's going to eventually catch Entwistle and knock him out. So Entwistle is a dangerous guy. Got to respect him. But I think Font's going to be a little bit too much for him here.
There's not much else to say about Ian Entwistle fights. He is a do-or-die leg lock fighter. Either he drops down onto the canvas and wraps your leg up and forces a tap in the first minute or two, or he loses, and he usually loses very convincingly, usually while complaining about his opponent being greased and then just getting repeatedly tagged in the face until the fight's over. That's what happened in his last fight against Alejandro Perez, but before that, Anthony Burchak, a talented bantamweight, he just got a hold of Burchak's leg and straightened it out and forced the tap. His heel hooks definitely are nasty. He's very physically strong. He's kind of like the bantamweight version of Husamar Palhares. It's just like Palhares, if the heel hook doesn't work, he's in trouble. And it's crazy. Ian Entwistle has never been out of the first round, whether in victory or defeat. Rob Font, it's kind of tough. Which Rob Font are we going to get? Are we going to get the confident Rob Font that won his first two fights by convincing TKO or knockout? Or are we going to get the Rob Font that was gun-shy against John Lineker? If Font hesitates at all in this fight, like any tiny mistake is going to be completely lethal against Ian Entwistle. So Font cannot hesitate. He needs to be accurate with his fists. And he needs to do a lot of damage because when Ian Entwistle goes for those heel hooks, his hands are wrapped around your feet and it leaves his face completely exposed. So Font needs to be on guard, ready to defend the heel hook, and he needs to be on the attack constantly. just keep smacking Entwistle in the face, whether it's with hard punches, with hammer fists, just slowly wear him down or quickly wear him down if you can. And Font definitely has the power to take Entwistle out. It's just a matter of can Entwistle force the tap before Font does the damage. And I'm going to side with Rob Font. Entwistle's entertaining, but he's kind of a one-trick pony. So Rob Font it is for me. Now moving on to the preliminary card headlining bout. It's another bantamweight contest, this time between veteran Brad Pickett, who is 26-11, and also veteran Yuri Alcantara, who is 32-7 with one no contest. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Alcantara -130, the comeback on Pickett at -110. Right now, it is currently Alcantara, the favorite still at -160. Pickett is at +140, looking over at fivedimes.eu. So people coming in on Alcantara, I understand it. Again, Alcantara, there's been a ton of hype around him for a long time. I think he's actually underperformed. I mean, with the ability the guy has, he's got length for the bantamweight division. He has stand-up skill. The guy has jiu-jitsu. He's got wrestling. He's got the total package. But unfortunately for him, he has a tendency with his fight IQ and his conditioning at times to be let down. I mean, it seems like if you could weather the early storm with a guy and you have some decent wrestling, then you're going to be able to have success enough to at least make it an interesting, close, competitive type of decision. That's exactly what Pickett has. But beyond that, Pickett has experience over very solid fighters himself. I mean, he's fought top quality competition throughout his entire career. He's gotten only better. I mean, Pickett continues to improve. Both these guys are getting up there a little bit. I believe Pickett's 38 and Alcantara's 36 years old. So both these guys are definitely not on the younger side of things. I mean, we'll see how much longer they can go. So this is an important fight for both of them to continue their careers moving forward, at least in being a little bit more successful. I think we are going to see a good fight. I mean, outside of, I just mentioned Alcantara having all that skill in every area. I mean, he does have a little bit of weakness with his takedown defense. He can be controlled in fights. And that's, I think, exactly what Pickett's going to look to do in this fight. Pickett does have some good hands. I like his boxing. He's got power. He's a very smart fighter, IQ wise as well. And he does a lot of great things, but in this matchup, I think he's going to want to get this fight to the floor, try to control Alcantara on the ground. I don't think Alcantara is going to be able to sub him. I mean, overall, Pickett has been subbed in his career a few times, but overall, his sub defense is actually pretty decent. It's getting better and better. So I don't expect a sub finish in this fight unless one of them rocks each other to the point where they can jump on something easy. So I think that kind of is a scratch. And I think it really does come down to who's going to outgrapple the other person. I think it's probably going to be Pickett, maybe not in the first round, but maybe round two, round three as it goes. I think Pickett's going to get to opposition a little bit more often. So a competitive fight, I'm expecting back and forth. I mean, it really should play out in all aspects of a true MMA fight, but I do lean a little bit more towards the underdog Pickett. I think, it, again, in his home crowd, his hometown behind him a little bit more, he's going to be, I think, extra motivated to get the W there. If it hits the scorecards, it's not necessarily going to hurt him either, being the hometown guy. I think that might, you know, kind of sway things for his favor a little bit as well. So there's a lot of good things to like about Pickett in this spot. And I mean, both these guys, again, have an important fight in front of them. They got to get the W here to stay relevant in the bantamweight division. And I think it's probably going to be Pickett getting it done. So expecting a good fight, fight of the night type of contender, but I do think Pickett's going to come away with a win here.
Yeah, this is definitely a battle of bantamweight veterans. Both Pickett and Alcantara are clearly in their golden years in the bantamweight division, being in their mid to late 30s. And that's definitely usually a disadvantage. When you get older, your reflexes get worse, your chin's worse, the power's still there, the experience is there, you still got your crafty tricks, and you still have the instincts. But there are definitely some serious disadvantages, and it's shown for both guys. Alcantara has had issues with his conditioning repeatedly in his career. And Pickett, while he's always been one of the more entertaining and exciting fighters, he definitely has had his chin tested a lot more as he's gotten closer to the end of his career. And heading into his last bout against Francisco Rivera, he was even talking about potentially retiring if he lost that fight. So he was able to win a decision, staved off retirement. So that's always a bit of a concern when you have fighters talking about retirement before fights. So that I'm definitely worried about that a little bit, but overall Pickett actually is a pretty good matchup here. Now Alcantara obviously has a lot of pure punching power, so if he connects with something real clean against Pickett, he can do some serious damage. But for the most part, Pickett should be a little bit more technically sound. Pickett has really good overall boxing. I mean, he was piecing up guys like Thomas Almeida in their fight with, you know, crisp uppercuts, had his opponent in serious trouble. So, Pickett definitely has overall excellent boxing ability. He just has to be a lot more mindful of his defense at this age and with his chin starting to go a little bit. Now, on the ground, Alcantara is excellent on the ground, too. Has a very aggressive submission game. But I think Brad Pickett is just as good as Alcantara on the ground with probably a little bit better overall offensive wrestling. So I think Pickett can potentially mix this up enough, and especially if the fight gets out of the first round, which it likely will as long as Alcantara doesn't knock Pickett out right away, I can see Brad Pickett just grinding this one out, whether it's doing his thing on the feet to outpoint Alcantara or getting some takedowns and working over Alcantara a little bit on the canvas. So I think Brad Pickett still has enough guile in him to pull this off, so I'm going to pick him as well. Now moving on to the pay-per-view main card, we're kicking things off with a featherweight matchup between Mirsad Bektik, who is 10-0, and Russell Doan, who is 14-6. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Bektik -705, the comeback, on Doan at +435. And right now it's actually been bet up to -800 for Bektik. The comeback on Doan is now +500. So didn't open it quite high enough. Should have been a little bit higher. I mean, a lot of people are going to eat. I mean, I'm sure there's some people that came in straight. This line was just opened a few hours ago too. So it's still relatively fresh, but I'm sure a lot of people are going to come in even at that 7-1 price and take it straight. And then obviously a lot of people are going to throw it in parlays as well with Bektik. I mean, Doan, he's actually a pretty good fighter, so seeing him at this price is a little bit surprising, I'm sure, to a lot of people that know what kind of fighter he is. And another guy that's really well-rounded and his skill set, he's a finisher. He's able to get the fight to the ground. He's got decent wrestling at times as well. Conditioning is a little bit of an issue. Of course, his chin is a little bit of an issue at times. Even though he hasn't been knocked out officially, I mean, he's been rocked in fights a little bit before as well. And then, of course, his sub-defense, even though he's got that sub-offense that can definitely finish things quickly, his sub-defense is something of a concern at times as well. So Doan, unfortunately for him, he's run into a little bit of bad luck recently. He just hasn't been able to get on track and get the W's at bantamweight. And this fight's actually on short notice and at featherweight against probably a better fighter than he's faced thus far in the UFC. I mean, not even probably. It's definitely the case if you look at the competition that he's been through this far. So I do see potential in Doan as a bantamweight. You don't want to give up on him quite yet. I mean, the guy can definitely win some fights there, but he is on a 3-fight losing skid. Now, again, he's moving up a weight class and facing Bektik, an undefeated prospect that a lot of people are very high on. They think that this guy is a potential title challenger, maybe even a future champion in the featherweight division. And it's hard to argue that. If you look at Bektik, he is a very complete fighter. I mean, on the feet, the guy has knockout power in both hands. He mixes things up well. He's got clean technique. He's just not one of these aggressive guys that just throws bombs or whatever. I mean, it's technical bombs. He does definitely have enough technique and power to go along with it that he puts people on the feet. Not just that, the guy has outstanding wrestling. I mean, he's able to out-wrestle some of the better wrestlers that you could think of. I mean, in the octagon, in the cage so far, his wrestling has been up to the task for sure. So it's hard to get him down to the ground. His takedown defense is fantastic. So he gets to dictate where the fight takes place, and that's hard for most opponents, especially with the kind of striking skill the guy has on the feet as well. So Bektik is just a tough out. I mean, Doan coming in, stepping in on short notice, you got to give him respect. I mean, the guy's a warrior for sure, up a weight class. He knows what he's facing with Bektik. There's no doubt about that. So he's doing the UFC a favor here. I don't think it's going to work out too great for him, though, but he's got nothing to lose. I mean, he's in that spot where if he goes out here and pulls off the upset against Bektik, a lot of people are going to be kind of hopping on his wagon a little bit, thinking, man, this guy did it. He beat a heck of a fighter. This guy's legit. He's going to get back on track, and maybe those three losses won't look as bad, obviously, if he gets a big W over Bektik. So nothing to lose because everybody's expecting him to get beat here, and he probably does, though. So that's the hard thing. I don't think there's any value on him as a dog. I obviously don't think there's any value on Bektik as a favorite at this price either, because you know what? Even if Bektik overall has looked pretty solid, I know he does get a bit chinny at times. I mean, he has been rocked before in fights, not just even the UFC fight that I'm talking about with Skelly rocking him with that illegal knee. I mean, if you look previously, he's been stunned in a couple fights as well. So, I mean, Bektik, it has a toughness, has the recovery time that it's probably not a big issue. And his chin, I'm not trying to say he's got a bad chin, but it's something that you do have to keep an eye on a little bit, because as he faces better competition, then that might come up again and we might see what he's made of at that time. But right now against Doan, I don't think he has to worry about it too much. I think Bektik is the better fighter clearly in all areas, and he's probably going to get the job done here. So as long as he's careful, he should have no problem beating Doan in the spot.
I'll keep this one sweet and simple. Mirsad Bektik, in my opinion, is one of the most complete fighters in the entire UFC roster. He has the wrestling, he has the striking, he has some power, he has submissions, he has the technique, you name it, he's got it. And Russell Doan's on a 3-fight losing streak as a bantamweight moving up a weight class on short notice. The only thing going against Bektik at all in this fight is the fact that he hasn't fought in a really long time since his TKO victory over Lucas Martins, because he had a knee injury and had surgery. And this is his first fight back. So he's going to be a little rusty, and maybe he doesn't trust the knee quite the same that he used to. And maybe he doesn't have the same explosion. We'll see how he looks. But for the most part, this is just a test to see how Bektik looks after a long layoff, because in my opinion, he is a top 10 featherweight when he's healthy. And if he looks healthy, then this is a guy that is going to be a serious contender in the future. And Russell Doan, a fighter that just has not looked very good in recent fights, especially the Jared Downing fight, where he was repeatedly taken down by kind of a one-dimensional wrestler. I think this is going to be a nightmare matchup for him, and I think Mirsad Bektik wins convincingly. Now moving all the way up to the heavyweight division, we have Stefan Struve, who is 31-8, taking on Daniel Omelinchuk, who is 19-5-1 with one no contest. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I hope it's Struve -210, the comeback on Omelinchuk at +160. Right now, looking for five dimes, it is Struve -175. Omelinchuk is +155. So line margins have tightened up a little bit more dog action coming in, but nothing significant. And I'm sure we'll see some parlay love maybe push that line back up for Struve a little bit as well. Tough fight. I mean, both these guys have some striking ability, obviously. I mean, the first thing that should stand out to you all and to us all is the size difference here. I mean, Struve is going to have a huge reach advantage. I believe at least 10 inches of pure reach over Omelinchuk. I mean, he's going to be taller than him, about a foot taller. And I mean, with that kind of reach, that's a factor for anybody. I mean, to deal with somebody that's skilled like Struve is on the feet or on the ground with that kind of reach advantage, it's just tough. And Omelinchuk has actually looked pretty good recently. I mean, he's the type of fighter that at the beginning of his career, especially when he was suffering a few setbacks and losses, a lot of people were kind of thinking, oh man, this guy's terrible. Shouldn't he be in the UFC roster? But of course, he's rebounded since then, and he's actually won three straight, I believe, and he's looked pretty decent doing so. I mean, he showed us that he does have heart. He does have improving takedown defense. I mean, that's kind of what hindered him in the past a little bit as well. And he does have a little bit of power on the feet, so you got to watch out for it. He's not an easy guy to sub, so for Struve to submit him, I think it's still going to be kind of a task. And I think he does have a little bit of underrated wrestling too. So Omelinchuk is game. If the size difference wasn't so huge, honestly, I would probably pick him to win against Struve, but it is what it is. I think Omelinchuk is going to be tested even in the wrestling department here. Struve gets on top on the ground. I mean, he's going to smother him. He does have the kind of skill that is going to be very dangerous for Omelinchuk on the ground or on the feet. I mean, the clinch game for Struve, the length, I mean, if he could keep him at bay a little bit in that aspect as well, he should have some success there. So I think it's Struve's fight to win or lose. I mean, I really don't trust his chin all the way, obviously. I mean, Omelinchuk is going to have to really test that chin out to get the W here and possibly put him out, but it's going to be a hard task for him to do that. So I wouldn't lay the juice on Struve. I wouldn't be shocked if Omelinchuk does maybe pull off a knockout win or something like that, or even maybe gets top position along the way, and who knows? I mean, if it does hit the scorecards, I don't expect it to, but if it does hit the scorecards, maybe we see a crazy decision or something like that. But overall, I mean, Struve is the better fighter, has fought the more experienced fighters. He's going to have the size. He is the more technical fighter as well. So all signs indicate that he should win this fight. Just not a confident pick, but I'm going to go Struve's way.
I'm a little bit more confident. I just think this fight kind of reminds me of Stefan Struve against Paul Buontello. Now, obviously, Buontello was a little bit of a step behind Daniel Omelinchuk, but not that much. Omelinchuk is a full foot shorter than Stefan Struve. He's going to be giving up 10 inches in reach. 7 inches in leg reach. I mean, if Stefan Struve can just keep him at bay, this is going to be a walk in the park for him. The problem is, will he be able to keep him at bay? Struve has always had a bit of difficulty keeping guys from getting inside and landing the big shot. Mark Hunt, a guy that's a similar build to Omelianchuk, was able to get in, crack him, blast him, knock him down, finish him. Same thing with Roy Nelson. But again, that was a little bit longer ago. Struve has started to kind of turn the corner, especially since he's been working with the Black Zillions and with Henry Hooft. He's kind of taken his striking to another level. I mean, now, granted, this is Antonio Silva, but Antonio Silva was able to charge forward, and Struve blasted him with an uppercut on the way in and put him out in just a matter of seconds. So that was a very, very good improvement for Struve kind of fending off a guy trying to get inside. Now, Omelianchuk, he's definitely tougher than Antonio Silva, has a much better durability. The problem is, you know, he's not the greatest at closing the distance against bigger foes. I think if Struve can keep pumping that jab in his face, keep landing some heavy kicks, it's going to be a long night for Omelianchuk. And then to top that off, while Struve doesn't have an amazing ability to take the fight to the ground, he should also have a huge edge if this fight does go to the floor. Just with those long limbs, he can really wrap you up like a boa constrictor. So, for the most part, I think unless Omelianchuk lands just some big Hail Mary left hook, then I think Stefan Struve can win this fight relatively convincingly. He just has to avoid allowing Omelianchuk to get inside, and I think he should be able to do that. Now, moving on to the light heavyweight division, we have Ovin St. Preux, who is 19-8, taking on Jimmy Manua, who is 15-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA odds maker's perspective on this one?
I open OSP minus 170, the comeback on Manua at plus 130. Right now, it is OSP minus 155. Manua is at plus 135, so line margins have tightened up a little bit. Interesting fight for sure. I mean, because both these guys are known to be knockout artists for sure. I mean, both these guys have decent takedown defense, prefer to keep it upright and have a ton of power on the feet. Both of these guys are long as far as reach goes. So this is a dangerous fight for both guys here. I mean, OSP, I think, has especially recently, I mean, been in there with John Jones, with the likes of John Jones, wasn't finished by Jones. He's been on the rise a little bit as well. I know that he's fought Glover and was finished by Glover. He got it, went over Shogun. It's just basically what I'm trying to say is OSP's been a little bit more impressive overall, and he's got a little bit more confidence. People think he does belong in that upper tier as far as light heavyweight division goes. And Manoa is still yet to be determined. I mean, a lot of people do realize what kind of power this guy does possess on the feet. I mean, nasty knockout power. He is getting better. His cardio is getting better as well, because that was one thing early on in the UFC career of Manoa when he first came in. I mean, cardio and conditioning was definitely an issue, and it still is a little bit, but he's definitely addressed it. He's the better fighter than he once was. So this is going to be interesting. I mean, honestly, it's going to be the first person that makes a mistake that probably gets caught and dropped first. So it could realistically go either way. I just have a little bit more confidence in OSP right now. I trust his chin a little bit more. And so I'm going to go his way, but man, this fight is just crazy. I think we could definitely see a knockout either way, and it could be a dog or pass situation here. I wouldn't lay the juice against Manoa. I mean, that's the kind of power this guy has, and he deserves some respect. And the way these guys match up against each other, he could definitely pull off a W here. So, and again, another spot, just like Struve. I think Struve does get the win here in his fight, I should say, but I'm not that confident. With OSP, I could say the same thing. I think I'm going to pick OSP, just not a big confidence pick, because Manoa obviously is going to be game and he's going to be ultra dangerous. So I could realistically see this fight go either way.
This is a bit of a tricky fight. Now, Ovin St. Preux definitely has experience and has competed better against better opposition than Jimmy Manoa. But for the most part, both of these guys have come up short in all of their biggest high-profile fights. I would say, now St. Preux does have a couple nice wins under his belt, you know, like Shogun. But for the most part, when Ovince was matched in there against guys like Glover Teixeira, John Jones, Ryan Bader, basically three guys in the top five, he lost all those fights. Jimmy Manoa, same thing. You know, he worked his way up in the UFC with a couple early, victories with injury stoppages and stuff, but then he started getting matched against a bit tougher competition, and it didn't go so well for him. So I think this time around, we're going to see, you know, who can potentially take it to that next level. You know, Manua, he lost to Gustafsson and Anthony Johnson. So, I think Oben St. Preux, he is the more well-rounded of the two. If the fight does go to the floor, I expect Manua to be on his back and Oben St. Preux to be in top position, hunting for submissions, maybe dropping some ground and pound. And on the feet, Manua, he does have a little bit more technique. St. Preux definitely has that surprise factor with good power out of his left hand, can mix in some heavy kicks, but he kind of sometimes lacks in killer instinct. Now, he's capable of big highlight reel finishes, obviously, with, you know, the Shogun knockout, with his performance against Patrick Cummins, but he doesn't always live up to that. I mean, I really thought that he was going to knock out Feijão, and he just could not. Even after he hurt him early, he just couldn't quite pull the trigger after he suffered a bit of an injury. So I think, honestly, if this fight gets in the clinch, Manua could potentially have an advantage. He fought pretty strongly in the clinch against Jan Blachowicz, who is a very good stand-up fighter overall. And Manua does have a good ability to mix things up on the feet, and he does have some solid fight-ending power. So St. Preux can't get arrogant here. He's a favorite for a reason because of his experience and well-roundedness. But if this turns into a pure stand-up match, then St. Preux is playing with fire a little bit. So I'm going to pick St. Preux, but I'm not insanely confident, mainly because this is in Manua's backyard, and St. Preux primarily has just been standing and trading in most of his fights, and that definitely could get him in trouble here. Now dropping down to the middleweight division, we have Vitor Belfort, who is 25-12, taking on Gegard Mousasi, who is 39-6-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Open Mousasi -350, the comeback on Belfort at +250. Right now it's Mousasi -335. Belfort's up to +275. So line margins have tightened up a little bit. Then again, another spot where they are getting two-way action on this fight. Man, Belfort being this big of a dog, I mean, outside of championship level fights or, you know, title fights or whatnot, it's kind of surprising, but Mousasi is that good. I think he has been one of the best middleweights for a long time. I mean, he gets better fight by fight in most cases, it seems. And Belfort, even though he's been around forever and he's still relevant, I mean, the guy could definitely still win some fights in the middleweight division. I mean, he's proven that. It's just when he takes that big step up against the top tier guys these days is where he kind of suffers a setback. And that's exactly what he's doing here as well. I think Mousasi is legitimately in that kind of title picture. I mean, I realize he had some setbacks against Jacare, against Machida back a little while ago as well. So with Mousasi kind of getting to that spot and not really having that much success either, you can make a case for him almost being around the same realm as Belfort, but I do think they're different fighters. I think Mousasi has more left in the tank. He can utilize his wrestling here more so than Belfort, and that's one big key to this fight, I think, as well, because Mousasi has been known most of his career as a striker, but he's way more capable these days to doing just being a complete MMA fighter. I mean, he's able to take the fight to the floor. His wrestling has improved year by year. You can see the improvements defensively and offensively. So he has a good ground game. It's going to give Belfort problems, especially as the fight goes a little bit. And I think on the ground, even jiu-jitsu wise, obviously Belfort has a decent jiu-jitsu game. I mean, for crying out loud, he almost subbed John Jones, although that was one spot that all of us were a little bit surprised, because Belfort primarily known for his striking, for his speed, for his power, and I think that's what's going to win him the fight if he wins here as well. It's not going to be a submission game. I think Mousasi, if there is somewhat of a sub or dominant position on the ground or something like that, it's probably Mousasi as well. Now on the feet, if for some reason Mousasi can't get this down to the floor, he has to be careful, because one thing that I don't like about Mousasi as of late is defensively at times, I mean, he does get tagged. I mean, we've seen Jacare tag him a little bit too before he was able to get the fight to the ground and get through that defense of Mousasi. And then, you know, he's tough. Mousasi definitely has a decent chin on him, but still at this level with that kind of power and the power that Belfort also possesses. I mean, he's got to be careful. You don't want to take a lot of those shots. So Belfort does have a puncher's chance. There's no doubt about that. But I just think what's going to happen here is Musasi probably gets it down to the floor, controls a little bit better. And again, also you can't count obviously Musasi out on the feet either, because I think he is the more diverse striker in this area, this spot as well. And I mean, he did bounce back and look really good after a setback to Hall. So Musasi has a little bit of a point to prove. I know he's hungry to kind of earn another title shot along the way and get kind of, you know, mentioned along the lines of guys that deserve a title shot or whatnot as well, at least. So I think he does get the job done here. I think that he also just made a case recently about something. He mentioned something like, how is this guy even Belfort even ranked higher than me if I'm the favorite in the fight? And really, I don't think Belfort should be ranked higher than Musasi either. So I think with this fight, with this victory, he takes that top five spot and he'll probably earn that. So it is what it is. I think that Belfort is going to be game and dangerous, but Musasi is the better fighter at this stage, and it should show come Saturday night.
Yeah, I think we've seen kind of where Vitor Belfort stands in the totem pole of the middleweight division with his performances in recent fights. Now, obviously, he has those big wins over Michael Bisping and Luke Rockhold, basically the 1 and 2 in the division, and that's probably where all of the hype and the high rankings come from. But since then, he hasn't looked so great. Yeah, he has some wins over Dan Henderson, and we'll get to Dan in a minute. But sandwiched between those wins have been major, just dominating losses to Chris Weidman and Jacare Souza. Basically, Vitor Belfort, if he doesn't put you away with a head kick or with a flurry of punches early in a fight, he's probably going to get knocked out on the ground. He just has he's game on the canvas with an active guard, but it just seems like any time that he gets put on his back, something bad happens. So, what I expect to happen here is this fight will probably be competitive on the feet because Vitor is capable of, you know, such violence and quick bursts of it. But if Gegard Mousasi is smart, he takes his fight to the floor with his significantly improved wrestling that he has continued to showcase throughout his recent UFC run, and then just dominates Vitor on the canvas with a heavy ground and pound. And I just don't expect Vitor to be able to withstand it. And especially if this fight wears on, maybe into the second round, if it does go that far, I don't expect Vitor to last long at all. He just... basically, right at this point, he seems like he has the one round gas tank to try to put his opponent away. And if that doesn't work, he's done. So, Vitor is going to be dangerous in the first minute or two. And if he gets put on his back at any point in that moment, it's over. So I really think, Vitor is a little bit past his prime at this point. And I expect that Gegard Mousasi probably puts him away by knockout in the first round. So my pick is going to be Gegard Mousasi. Now moving on to the main event of the evening. It is a rematch for the UFC middleweight title as champion. Michael Bisping, who is 30-7, defends his belt against Dan Henderson, who is 32-14. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I opened Bisping minus 240 to come back on Henderson at plus 180. Right now it's minus 230 for Bisping and Henderson is plus 190. So line margins have tightened up again. And there is two-way action on this fight as well. Initially got bet up a little bit. Now we're seeing some action back towards Henderson. This is a tough one, man, because, I mean, Henderson, first of all, he shouldn't even – with all due respect to Dan Henderson, the guy is a legend. He's a UFC Hall of Famer for sure, one of the best all times in the sport. I mean, he goes up there with the likes of Randy Couture and those type of fighters, because what he's able to accomplish at his age right now, still being relevant at all, is amazing. I mean, he's a special breed of fighter that we're going to see few in a lifetime for sure, if guys like Couture and Henderson or whatnot. But that being said, Bisping deserves a ton of respect as well. But I'm saying Henderson does not deserve this title shot because obviously he's just getting the shot because he does have a win, you know, big knockout win, highlight reel knockout. I mean, one of the most devastating knockouts in UFC history, actually, especially with that follow-up shot after Bisping was knocked out already. It's just famous. He's getting that redemption opportunity Bisping is against Henderson. So that's the only reason Henderson is getting this fight. And the UFC was able to convince the fans that it was an okay match to make. So credit to them as well. And honestly, I mean, I don't think a lot of us mind it. I think it's an intriguing fight for sure. And I think most of us are going to kind of be pulling for Henderson in this spot to see him go out with a, you know, with a huge win, knocking Bisping out possibly again, and, you know, taking home that title and then obviously forfeiting it because he did say it was probably win or lose is going to be his last fight, and retiring on a high note. So a lot of us would like to see kind of a storybook ending for Henderson. But unfortunately for him, one time he had a pretty granite chin. I mean, it was hard. You could clip this guy. He was going to take it and he was going to probably knock you out. But he is getting tagged recently. He is getting knocked out. I mean, age, you can't really beat Father Time for long. So age does have an impact here, and Henderson's chin is definitely not the same as it once was. Bisping, on the other hand, he is fighting for redemption a little bit, fighting for a little bit more respect as well. A lot of people counted him out against Rockhold. I did. I was one of those guys. I mean, most of you guys probably that are listening did as well. Credit Bisping. He deserves to be the champion and where he's at right now because of all the work he put in. I mean, you say it was a fluke, whatever you want to say with Bisping. I know there's a lot of disrespect going out there, but the guy has put in the time, the guy has put in the work, and the guy deserves to wear that belt. Now, we'll see how long he keeps it, but this is a winnable fight for him because I do think, I mean, unless he doesn't realize he's got to circle away from the power hand of Henderson and gets clipped again, I mean, he should win his fight. I think his – obviously his striking outcome or output is a little bit better. He can mix things up a little bit more. He's getting more confidence in his own right. I mean, right now, mentally, Bisping is the best he's ever been, and that can be scary for a lot of middleweights in the division, honestly, because he's got that confidence. He's got that swagger about him, and he's got the fight IQ as well. He's definitely an intelligent fighter. So a lot of good things to say about Bisping. I mean, I do have, like I said, a ton of respect for him because he deserves to be in this spot. And he should probably be able to do enough damage along the way to probably get Henderson out of there as well. So I think we are going to see a knockout in this fight, but instead of Henderson knocking Bisping out, I think it's probably going to be Bisping eventually finishing Henderson in this fight this time around. So I wouldn't lay it though. No way. I mean, I do think it's a dog or pass situation or a few props out there by knockout, that sort of thing inside the distance. I mean, that's the way you want to play this fight more than anything else because I think one of these guys is going to get put out. So I do think it's going to be Bisping to get the W here. I am going to pick him to win, but there's no way I would lay over 2-1 against Henderson and that H-bomb, especially the way he matches up with Bisping. And you know, he's got a little bit of a chip on his shoulder, even though Bisping's kind of in this for redemption. Henderson wants to prove that first time wasn't a fluke and he'll do it again, especially as he goes out, like I said, kind of retires on a high note here. So a lot of motivation for both fighters here. I think we should see some fireworks. But I have to just use common sense here, and I think that Bisping should be the better fighter at this point and should get the victory here.
Yeah, this fight is all about whether or not Bisping plays Henderson's game. If you've been watching Dan Henderson fight lately, it hasn't been pretty. I mean, he lost a decision to Lyoto Machida. He loses a decision to Rashad Evans. Gets blasted by Vitor. Gets dominated by Daniel Cormier, gets smoked by Gegard Mousasi, gets blasted again by Vitor. And in that span of time, he was able to pick up some knockout wins over Shogun, Tim Boach, and most recently Hector Lombard. Now, I just definitely am concerned about Dan Henderson. I mean, the guy is 46 years old. He's a freak of nature. He really is, because while I don't think his chin is very good anymore, his recovery still is. He gets dropped, and then if you don't immediately pounce on him and put him away quickly, he'll fight his ass back to his feet and then be just as dangerous, if not more dangerous, than ever. Look at his last fight against Hector Lombard. He rocked Hector Lombard early. Lombard hit him back and could not put him away, and then Henderson connects with a head kick and then just one of the more brutal elbows you've ever seen. And you have to like go back and look at that elbow. It was just a perfect elbow thrown from a situation where he had landed the kick and he was almost kind of facing away from Lombard and just kind of back elbowed him right in the temple, put him to sleep. So, Dan Henderson, his finishing instincts are still as good as they've ever been. When he has somebody in trouble, he smells blood. He goes for the kill. His right hand, his right elbow, whatever you want to throw with his right arm, it is just as dangerous as it's ever been. So Michael Bisping definitely has to be careful here. Henderson still has that kind of hunched over style where he just kind of stalking you down, waiting to land that big shot. And Bisping, on the other hand, is a lot more fluid, a lot more loose, a lot more working on the outside. I guarantee you in this fight, Bisping is not going to be circling to his left right into Dan Henderson's power. He is going to be circling to the right. And that would be a very wise decision if you ask me. I expect Bisping to use a lot of head movement, to use a lot of defensive tactics, a lot of feints. And for the most part, I think he can just frustrate Dan Henderson. I don't expect Bisping to just go in there and take out Henderson like he was able to knock out Luke Rockhold in his last fight. I expect this to get drawn out a little bit if Bisping's going to win it. And then maybe Bisping just wears him down and eventually picks up a TKO victory, maybe in the second or third round. I know that this means a lot to Bisping. The UFC 100 knockout is one of the most embarrassing moments of his entire career. I mean, he was just about ready to get a title shot, and then Henderson knocked him out. One of the most vicious knockouts in UFC history. So, you know, this is a very emotional fight for him, and he cannot fight emotional, because if you get fight emotional, that usually means you start brawling a little bit, and Dan Henderson might be one of the last people on the planet you want to brawl with. So if Bisping can keep this fight technical, can stay on the outside, if he can circle to his left, or not to his left, if he can circle to his right, then he'll probably be in good shape. Maybe even if he mixes in some takedowns too. Henderson, while he does come from an Olympic Greco-Roman background, his takedown defense is not as good as it used to be. And I can definitely see Bisping getting some top position and maybe dropping some bombs from there too. So I expect Bisping to win. I mean, Bisping is probably going to be the underdog against most fighters that he defends this title against. But Dan Henderson, basically one fight from retirement, is not one of those guys. The power is still there, and if he connects with something nasty, it's going to be a hell of a story and a hell of a highlight. But I think Bisping probably sends Dan Henderson out on a low note here. So I'm going to pick him to win. I think maybe a third round TKO for Bisping at some point. So my pick is Michael Bisping. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC 204. Our premium bets for the event will be released this Friday following the weigh-in, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Odds Breaker premium member. If we have any free plays to give out for the event, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Dime Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.